Welcome to Financial Perspectives, the podcast. Join the team at Foster Group and our expert guests as we explore a variety of subjects that could impact your financial life. We will cover timely economic and financial market news, a wide range of personal financial planning ideas, and investment topics. Ultimately, we want to encourage educated optimism and do our best to provide valuable insights to help you navigate your financial journey with confidence. Please stick around at the end for important disclosure information. More information about Foster Group can be found in our ADV brochure at fostergrp.com.
Every year, December 31st seems to sneak up on us, and suddenly there's a list of things presented in newspapers, magazines, and online, along with things we hear from our friends that start with the phrase, "Have you done this yet?" And the "this" has a deadline of 12/31, and that's only 2 months away. You know, it's no fun to get in a rush at year end for anyone. So we wanted to walk through a set of ideas that you may want to consider, ways to reduce taxes a bit, but also ways to increase the effectiveness of your giving, both charitable giving and also how you might more effectively give to children, grandchildren, and others who you want to benefit. So to help us with this topic, I've asked Foster Group Lead Advisor Caleb Brown to join us. Caleb helps and advises many people, including helping with task preparation on a volunteer basis for people who just need a little extra help to make sure they get everything filed correctly but can't afford regular tax professionals. You know, every time I sit in a meeting with Caleb, I'm learning because he's sharing new ideas for how people can plan and accomplish goals on what new opportunities are being presented because of tax or regulation changes. And he makes it all so understandable and applicable. So Caleb, first off, maybe before we talk about too many specifics, I know one of the things that I've heard you talk about is, hey, the One Big Beautiful Bill is changing some things around the standard deduction and the itemized deduction. Why is it important that we understand that difference?
Yeah, so one thing is most people do take the standard deduction, but there's a whole nother way to calculate the deduction called itemization. And so really it's whatever's better for the client or for you. And so if you itemize, you have to track some things. You've got to track your medical expenses, mortgage interest, charitable giving, your income taxes for whatever state you're a part of. But if those things are high enough and it makes sense, you get a bigger deduction. But the IRS does give you a little bit of a easy button, and it's the standard deduction. That's what most people tend to do. It's a little over $30,000 if you're married filing jointly.
Okay. So most people will probably, that will apply to them. But it's important to know because you get the choice. You can choose to itemize or take the standard, whichever one really results in a better tax picture for you.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. One of the itemized deductions that you mentioned is charitable giving, and I know there's a little bit of a change because of the One Big Beautiful Bill as it reflects in 26, not going to take effect this year. But let's just talk through kind of what we need to be thinking about in terms of charitable giving and how it gets deducted.
Right. So this year's going to be a little bit better from an incentive plan to take your charitable giving in 2025. Some people just do it every year no matter what, but it may make more sense to do more in 2025 because there is a floor. And just to explain that, think of it like this. If you make $100,000 of income, the first 0.5% of that $100,000 does not count.
And that's for next year.
For next year.
Yeah.
So 2025, it doesn't have any kind of floor.
Yep.
But that's a big deal because let's say you have a really big income and you have really big charitable contributions. Some of those will get basically, they won't be included.
Won't be deductible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that first 500 in the case you're talking about would not be deductible. The other 4,500, if someone gave 5,000, that would be
correct
deductible in that situation. Yeah. So the other part of that that might make it a little bit better this year is has to do with what percentage gets applied to that deductibility. My understanding is you get full deduction based on your income tax bracket this year, but that might change next year?
Yeah, so another reason again for 2025 giving or just any of the itemization that you'd be doing is the total itemization you have in 2026, it can't exceed more than 35%. And so what that boils down to is if you have extremely high income, think 600, 750,000 or more, something like that, you're going to miss out on at least 2% of your itemized deductions for that year.
Okay. So it just makes sense if you're thinking about whether to do something this year or next year. We'll talk about donor advised funds in a minute, how maybe you could even bring some giving into this year that you plan on actually giving to a charity next year, but for tax purposes, it might be better in 2025.
2025 tends to be the year you want to be thinking hard about that.
Okay. Doesn't sound like for this year, though, really not a lot of changes to probably what people are going to do this year just in terms of their charitable planning.
No, I would say one other thing on that deductions piece that we're talking about with the itemization is if there is another change to that from that bill on the state and local income tax side.
Oh, right.
So it was increased to $40,000 this year.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do charitable giving, that gets added to the itemization bucket. And so that particular feature of it being increased to $40,000 is based on your income. So if you have a bigger income and you do charitable giving, you could potentially get more of a deduction there as well.
And you're talking about the SALT deduction.
Correct.
State and local tax deduction. Yep. And does that take effect this year, the $40,000, or is that in 26?
That happens this year, 2025.
This year. Okay, wow. So it actually came back almost like a retroactive. The bill was passed this year, but you actually get to...
That one less for 2025.
Interesting. Okay, great. I mentioned a few minutes ago just the idea of using a donor advised fund for charitable giving. You've talked a lot about this. I know the benefits of those things. Can you just kind of walk people through why they might want to consider using a donor advised fund for their charitable giving? I'm just going to tell you, I know when I've seen Caleb demonstrate this, it's good for everybody. It's good for the person doing the giving. It's good for the group that's going to receive the gift as well.
Yeah, I would say that's the first where I always like to lead with clients is who benefits the most is the charity that you care about. Mm-hmm. But essentially what a donor advised fund is just a giving account. It's an account that's it's already a charitable entity. So if you give to it, that's when you get the tax deduction. And so where I've seen this work really well is if you give not cash, but in investments, like appreciated securities. Mm-hmm. So my example would be you bought an investment 20 years ago for $10,000. It's worth $20,000 today. You give the $20,000 investment to your giving account.
Mm-hmm.
When you do that, you get a tax deduction right away. So that's going to benefit you this year. And so think again, if next year you're going to be doing some giving, you could potentially take next year's giving, bunch that into this year. But the other thing you get when you do the giving account is you avoid the gain that you would have realized. So in that $10,000 example to $20,000, there is a gain of $10,000. So imagine if instead of the whole strategy I just talked through, you cashed in the $20,000, paid gains of $10,000 on that $20,000, then gifted it to charity, you wouldn't get the same benefit. So you completely avoid capital gains, you get the tax deduction. And I've seen this before where sometimes the tax deduction itself is more than what the actual original investment was.
Yeah, so it's a big win. I think, the thing I keep taking away from that one is if the value of the security, as you said, was $20,000, you get to deduct the whole 20, and ultimately the charities are gonna get that whole 20 as well. If you had taken that same security that you had originally bought for 10, sold it, now you're gonna be paying taxes on the $10,000 of gains. That's gonna reduce the amount of cash you would have available to give. So you're going to be able to give less, you're going to be able to deduct less, and the charity's going to get less.
Right.
Yeah. So it really is a great strategy to think about using a donor advised fund. If you haven't done that, I'd really encourage you to consider talking to your advisor about how to get that done. Okay. Another thing to think about charitable giving is something called QCDs. What does QCD stand for, and why is that important to us?
So it's a qualified charitable distribution. And what it is, it's money you take out of an IRA account. It has to come from an IRA specifically. And instead of taking it to yourself, you gift it directly to a charity. So that's what it is. Why it's such a good deal is if you back up with that account, it usually originated from a contribution you made to an IRA or a 401k that eventually became an IRA. And so you got a tax deduction back in the day for that. The money grew tax deferred. You didn't pay any dividends or capital gains when it was growing. Mm-hmm. And then you're taking it out and you're gifting it to a charity. They're not paying taxes on it.
Mm-hmm.
And you never pay taxes on it, even though you took it out. So that does begin, that qualified charitable distribution allows, you're allowed to do that at 70 and a half. So there's some age things you got to be aware of.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a certain age too, where you're forced to take money out of these IRA accounts. And so it could be a great way to, if you're forced to take out 20,000, let's say, if you gifted 10, you're only taxed on the 10. And so this is another reason to consider this option, and usually ends up being the go-to strategy for clients when they hit those required minimum distribution ages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if you're really not needing the full amount of the, let's say, the required minimum distribution for lifestyle expenses, if you wouldn't have taken it out for a living, then to be able to give it actually kind of before it gets to you keeps it from being taxable to you. And again, the charity gets the full value of the gift.
Yeah, and another reason I really like these two is there's different tax triggers in the code. And so with two things, there's Medicare expenses that you pay. Mm-hmm. Those are based on your income. Mm-hmm. And so if you're taking money out of an IRA, that's going to crank up your income. But again, if it goes to charity, it doesn't show up. Mm-hmm. And then the other would be the new senior enhanced deduction that came out with this bill. Basically, if you're over 65, you get a $6,000 tax deduction, depending on some income limits. But again, if your income's higher, you may not qualify for that. And so this is the idea of giving with a qualified charitable distribution makes sense from that respect as well.
Yeah. On that $6,000 senior deduction, is that part of an itemization or does that exist someplace else in the tax?
Yeah, we call that like a bonus deduction.
Okay.
Because it doesn't matter if you itemize or if you do the standard, those two things we're talking about, you're just going to get that. But again, it's income based. Mm-hmm. And so I think the number is if you're over $250,000 and you're married filing jointly, you're just not going to get that deduction. Mm-hmm. So the ways to reduce that are the ideas behind that.
Mm-hmm. But if you're managing your income down a little bit in retirement, not only is the standard deduction going up, but now you're going to get this extra potential deduction on top.
Correct.
Okay, so we've talked a little bit about charitable giving. Let's shift gears and think about giving maybe to family members or people that we care about. And I know one thing that we've used in our family is a 529 plan, like college savings accounts. Tell us a little bit about those and why that's important to think about at the end of the year.
Yeah, with the 529, there are some immediate tax benefits in a lot of states, Iowa included. Mm-hmm. You get a state tax deduction for the contribution you put into it. But what it is, it's really for educational purposes. It's the goal behind that is education. Mm-hmm. So it could be for you, it could be for your kids, your grandkids. The money itself, it grows tax deferred. So again, you're not paying dividends and interest and capital gains taxes along the way. And whatever it grows to, it's essentially tax-free vehicle if you're doing it for educational purposes. And that's a pretty broad it's pretty broad these days. So they've done some things with this bill to expand on it, but you can use it for private school, public school, tutoring. You can buy a computer with it. It's room and board and all the typical things too. Yeah. So what I like about that account is not only is it for education, but it could be for other things. So imagine if your child leaves college and they still have some money left over, you could forward that on to the next generation, to your grandkids. Mm-hmm. Someday they're going to maybe have kids. So it's a good educational legacy, but what I've also seen is a new thing called a Roth IRA that you can take money from the 529 and put it in a Roth if you overfund it. That's probably the biggest question I get with these 529s is what if I overfund it? Well, it's like there's some new ways to handle that.
Yeah, I like that. Now, one of the things that we talked about a little earlier was it just seemed like, well, that seems like a backdoor way to establish a Roth. So there's got to be some qualification to how money gets from a 529 plan to a Roth for a beneficiary.
Yeah, there are some rules around it. So one thing is that 529 account does need to be open for at least 15 years.
Okay.
So it takes a little while there to build that up. But then you are capped at whatever the annual contribution limits are for the Roth IRA, and you're capped at $35,000. Like as a lifetime total. Okay. So you're not going to be able to super fund this thing and ramp up retirement for your kid or your grandkid.
Yeah. But it is great. I mean, to your point, people do have a concern sometimes about, well, what if there's money left over after my child is done with college? What can I do with that money? Both those options are great. You can change beneficiaries to other children or grandchildren or future grandchildren. And then, of course, that Roth IRA, I think that's a great opportunity where you go, hey, the money's really not lost for your child if they don't use it in college.
Yeah, we're seeing lots of flows into 529s. I can see that only being more so going forward.
Yeah, great. Another kind of gift we talk about to family members is something called an annual exclusion gift. A little more flexible, but why is this, again, important to think about before the end of the year?
Yeah, so if you're giving to kids, grandkids, or just anybody really you care about, The IRS does allow you to give, and they allow you to do it where you don't really have to tell them about it. Okay, so sometimes I've had that question, like, what if I give my child $10,000? Do they have to pay taxes on it? And the answer is no. There's an annual amount that goes basically unreported, and that number for each person this year is $19,000. So I could essentially give you $19,000. I could give your wife $19,000.
Good idea.
And your kids. And I wouldn't have to report it. They wouldn't have to report it. If you go above and beyond that, it's not that big of a deal either, but it is something you have to report to the IRS and file what's called a gift tax return.
Yeah. And I think what's great about those annual exclusion gifts is the $19,000, you know, if you're a married couple, it's like $19,000 for me and $19,000 from my wife to a single individual. So in essence, we could, as a couple, make a gift of $38,000.
Right.
And not have to file a gift tax return or do anything really in terms of, you know, tax reporting or gift tax payments.
Right. Yeah, this is a great one for folks who, if they've done a great job saving, they know they feel good about retirement and what that looks like, but they also want to benefit either the kids or grandkids or whoever is really important in their life. They want to see some of those benefits. They just start that process.
Yeah, I would say, you know, right now, when we look at the exclusion limits for what creates a taxable estate, it's a pretty high number today. So a lot of people maybe are thinking, well, we aren't going to have a taxable estate, so I don't need to get this money out of my estate today. But I always just remember from my own time in the legislature, someone can always rewrite the law. So there's no guarantee that in the future that those same estate tax limits are going to apply. They're very generous today, but they don't necessarily. We're not assured of them being as generous in the future. So for folks who have extra, they know that they're not going to use that. Starting to give some of that money to especially their adult children during their lifetime seems like a great strategy.
Yeah, I would say that. And along with that same strategy would be to consider giving, again, appreciate securities. Like I was describing on the donor advised fund, if you give appreciate security, the whole amount goes to the donor advised fund. Well, same idea if you give it, for instance, to, let's say, a grandchild. Let's say you got a grandchild who's just finishing up college. They're 22, 23 years old, and you gifted them an investment worth $10,000 that you maybe bought for $1,000 like a long time ago.
Yeah.
And maybe you're in a higher tax bracket than they are. It's a way to shift the tax bracket down. So they would, you know, close it out or whatever to use the dollars, and they pay taxes at their rates.
Yeah.
But for some people, those capital gains rates can be zero.
Yep.
Versus if your mom or dad or grandma and grandpa, maybe you're in a higher tax bracket, that's going to be a good way to shift as well.
Yeah, I like that. I think the idea of using appreciated securities when you can, you know, if someone can use that money and they're going to pay a tax at a lower rate.
Yeah.
Good gift to make. Okay, so again, we're talking about things that you want to consider doing before the end of the calendar year, because all these things have a 12/31 kind of reset date. Doesn't mean you can't do them next year, but if you want to accomplish some things this year and have them affect your tax return or things that you want to accomplish, 12/31 is kind of important. Another thing that's subject to that 12/31 deadline are 401k plans and contributions. So what should people be thinking about who are employed and maybe contributing to their 401k account today? What do they need to be thinking about as we get on here towards the end of the year?
Yeah, if they're looking to max it out, and that's the goal, which is a good goal, you can give this year up to $23,500. And so if you haven't done that or you're wanting to still potentially pursue that, you want to check with your HR, make sure you're on plan to do that. Mm-hmm. There's still time, right? You got a couple more months so you can increase your contributions to that. If you're over 50, you get a catch-up. It's like if you're over 50, apparently they're thinking you start saving more for retirement. So they allow you to do more, $7,500. And then now there is this, what's called a super catch-up. If you're between ages 60 to 63, you can do up to $11,250. So you get the normal $23,500, then the $11,250. So just a great way to increase your tax deduction, but also just save for your future too.
Yeah. So if you have kind of the extras here at the end of the year, got some room, might as well reduce the income and get it into that tax-deferred savings account.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Good ideas there. Okay, so one last planning opportunity to mention, at least in our conversation today, and that has to do with an idea called a Roth conversion. We touched on Roth IRAs as a result of like a 529 plan balance and how that beneficial can that be. What do we need to think about in terms of Roth conversions here at the end of the year, and why would someone even be interested in doing it?
Yeah, the Roth is, in my opinion, one of my favorite strategies, and a lot of financial planners love this strategy. So essentially, you think about your 401k dollars or your IRA dollars that are all pre-tax. Those are on a partnership with the IRS. You know, you're going to have to pay taxes when you take it out. Mm-hmm. Whatever dollar comes out to you is taxed 100% ordinary income. Mm-hmm. So the idea behind the Roth conversion is basically just buying out your partnership early. Mm. And you do that when your tax situation's lower. And so there is, I would say, a natural time when that happens. So if you've been working all your life and your tax bracket's here, and then you stop working, and then your income goes down, right? So your taxes also go down with that. So from that point till you're forced to take money out of those required, out of those accounts, they're called required minimum distributions. Could be 5 years, could be 10 years, it just depends on the person. There's this opportunity valley here where you can start to increase taxes, and you do it on purpose, which sounds weird, but you pay the taxes.
Yep.
And when you do that, you do it at whatever rate you've decided on. And it's, you know, better to deal with the devil you know than the one you don't. And so we don't know where future tax rates are, are headed. So the idea would be pay those taxes at smaller levels. And once you've paid the taxes, you're done. It's a Roth IRA that it goes into. So that account is tax-free if you take it out later in life. So the benefit there is you're just kind of spreading out your tax risk of what could happen in the future with a future tax law change, because they say they're permanent, but it's only permanent until the next person changes.
Yeah.
It's always written in pencil.
Right, yeah. The next administration can always do things to change the rules. I think that tax, kind of that valley, you know, where you have the lower income, that's one people need to really think about as they are maybe approaching retirement. So they're going to see their earned income go way down. This also has to do with when you might claim or not claim Social Security. People talk about delaying claiming Social Security to let that benefit increase. Well, by delaying, you also keep your earned income or taxable income down, giving yourself more opportunity maybe to make those Roth conversions at a relatively low tax rate and, you know, before things in the future. I think the thing you said about the more money that we can convert to a Roth before we hit required minimum distribution age, we can shrink those IRAs that we're going to be forced to take money out of, so that RMD in the future goes down. That's just going to save on taxes as well.
Yeah, it's one of the benefits that are out there. And so we try to look at that each year for each client and decide if it's going to make sense to do it or not.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. You know, all of these things that we're talking about, they're things that they may or may not work in your specific situation. So we always are advising people, hey, talk to your advisor, talk to your tax professional to make sure that these are the kinds of things that you might be able to benefit this year or maybe next year. You know, everybody's situation is unique. And just like you said, it always pays to look here at the end of the year. Is there something that I should be doing now, you know, in this kind of unique year that we have? So.
Yeah, we always tell people too, don't wait till like December 20th to give us a call to talk through these things. Like, the fall is a great time to go ahead and make an appointment with your advisor if you're not already scheduled to do that.
Yeah, thanks. All right. Well, we talked about a lot of ideas today. And like we said, you may want to meet with your advisor just to make sure you're set for the end of 2025. For clients of Foster Group, we encourage you to give your advisor a call here. If anything has changed, or maybe you heard something today that clicked and you're interested in implementing that, or at least seeing if it applies to you. If you don't have an advisor or thinking maybe it's time to get one, of course, we'd welcome that conversation with you as well. So please feel free to call or contact us on our website at www.fostergrp.com. Thanks again, Caleb, for all you do, for joining us today. I think it's been super helpful.
Yeah, thank you.
See you next time.
The previous presentation by Foster Group was intended for general information purposes only. No portion of the presentation serves as the receipt of, or as a substitute for, personalized investment advice from Foster Group or any other investment professional of your choosing. Different types of investments involve varying degrees of risk, and it should not be assumed that future performance of any specific investment or investment strategy, or any non-investment related or planning services, discussion, or content, will be profitable, be suitable for your portfolio or individual situation, or prove successful. Foster Group is neither a law firm nor accounting firm, and no portion of its services should be construed as legal or accounting advice. No portion of the content should be construed by a client or prospective client as a guarantee that he or she will experience a certain level of results if Foster Group is engaged, or continues to be engaged, to provide investment advisory services. A copy of Foster Group's current written disclosure brochure discussing our advisory services and fees is available upon request or at www.fostergrp.com/disclosures.